Tonight is the first Tuesday evening for the fall season, and we are off to a brilliant start, if I do say so myself, with the Fort Worth-based artist Linda and Ed Blackburn, who are here in conversation with Dr. Mark Thistlethwaite, the Kay and Velma Kimball Chair of Art History at TCU. All three have a long and rich history with this community and with this museum. For the sake of time, because the program is packed, I will attempt to keep this introduction short, but I have to say it is a significant challenge to do so, given my enormous affection for each of tonight's participants. Linda and Ed work independently, but also collaboratively, as a husband and wife artist team. They both received a BFA from UT Austin and an MFA from UC Berkeley. Each has an extensive exhibition record and bibliography, and have been recognized throughout their careers, both having received National Endowment for the Arts grants. Linda, a Mid-America NEA in 1988, and an NEA in 1990. Ed, an NEA in 1977, and again in 1989, both in painting. Linda has taught across the Metroplex, including a very popular monoprinting workshop that she did for years here at the Modern. I think there are probably some of you in the audience tonight who took those workshops and remember them fondly. Ed is also an accomplished educator. He is a beloved painting professor at UNT, a mentor for many. His most recent exhibition, Double Take, Works by Ed Blackburn, just closed at the Tyler Museum of Art. The Modern is proud to have both Linda and Ed represented in the permanent collection. Mark, having earned degrees in art history from the University of California at Santa Barbara, a BA and an MA, and University of Pennsylvania, a PhD, specializes in the art of the United States, but has taught a wide range of courses at TCU, including quite a few in this auditorium, in conjunction with exhibitions at the Modern. Current projects include the exhibition Frederick Remington's East, which is being organized by the Sid Richardson Collection here in Fort Worth. The title of tonight's presentation, Ed, Linda, and Mark's Adventures at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth, indicates their relationship with this museum. Having all participated in Tuesday evenings over the program's 25-year history, as seen in the image that accompanied the announcement, the three worked together on a 1998 exhibition at the Modern's then downtown annex space titled Adventures of Eddie Leone, an impressive installation drawn from Ed and Linda's collaborative practice and curated by Mark. So getting to the program, please join me in welcoming Linda and Ed Blackburn and Mark Thistlethwaite.
Thank you. They're sitting down because we've changed everything, what we're going to do. Delighted to see so many of you here tonight. Originally, this evening's program was intended to be an interview or a conversation with Linda and Ed and myself. During the summer, I had worked up a list of prompts, and we sat down one day in their studio for a run-through of my 8 to 10 questions. After an hour had passed, we finally finished with the first question and had, in terms of chronology, gotten as far as 1967. In addition, Ed and Linda mentioned that they had several hours of film and video, plus an untold number of images of their paintings, monoprints, drawings, installations, ceramics, sculptures, all of which, they said, they kind of wanted to include. So clearly a new format was needed. We had a brainstorm that a video could be created that would give a sense of their history and their art as it related to this museum, which sounded great to me because I figured I was now an innocent bystander to their adventure. But I got roped into being part of the video production, or what became known as the committee, And the result of our efforts are going to be previewed tonight in a video that runs about 30 minutes. When the video ends, Linda and Ed will speak briefly about their current work, and then we'll open it up to questions and very short answers. So,
I'm supposed to report to a Mr. Antonin. I wonder what he's like.
I don't know.
We arrived in 1965, which was 9 years after the new building had opened. It was called the Fort Worth Art Center. It had its beginnings in the 1890s, and it was located in the downtown public library. So, in 1965, it already had a permanent collection, exhibition schedule, and an art school, with an enrollment of about 120 students. We were to teach painting, figure and portrait painting, and Ed was also a part-time guard in the exhibition area. Teaching painting is a learning curve for the teacher. You learn to appreciate the uniqueness of each student. This alone can help you in your own work by appreciating your own uniqueness. Moving from the format of portraiture, my work became more open-ended and direct. Everything is related. Everything in the universe.
Thank you.
Chicago, the Apollo 11 crew aboard. We now switch live to Science Editor Jules Bergman aboard Air Force One.
Several hats at the museum, but everything was informed by my work as an artist.
Besides teaching in the school and some guard duty, I also worked as an installation assistant. But my first experience of showing art at the museum was through the Tarrant County Annual. This yearly juried exhibition was of great benefit to local artists. During this time, I had some new ideas coming along, the way it is with artists, sharper focus, and how you might make a painting with that.
In 1969, the board members were looking to expand the horizons of the museum and brought in Henry Hopkins to be the new director. Henry was from the L.A. County Museum, but he also had started a little gallery that was the first to show Edward Boucher, Robert Irvin, and other notable West Coast artists. In Texas, he put the museum on the path that it is today, and the words Art Center was dropped and was now changed to the Fort Worth Art Museum. Full museum exhibitions were given to Robert Rauschenberg, Klaus Oldenburg, and to Dennis Hopper's photographs. Thank you. In 1972, Carol Dean Lee curated a series of shows called South by Southwest. Ed was included. He exhibited some recent paintings on unstretched canvas with trompe l'oeil collage imagery. The museum purchased one of these called Pop Post. Ed also felt the title could be read the other way, as Post Pop, with the idea that it was taking up where pop art finished. Subscribing to Jim Malone's concept, you might as well assume you're doing something significant in case no one else does. And had the idea to create an exhibition called The Great American Rodeo. I helped with the beginning of the exhibition, mainly by going to New York to Red Groom's studio to invite him to participate. Red entitled his piece Ruckus Rodeo, which it truly is. A walk-through, stumble-through, extravaganza experience, which has become a museum favorite over the years. Though international in scope, we were happy to have George Green from Dallas pressing his reptile tiles motif into service as Texas tombstones, and Terry Allen's majestic view of the Paradise Motel inside and out. Ed was also included with a 9x13-foot painting from a thumbnail ad of Larry Mahan Rodeo Rider. He loosely painted a grid with three colors imitating the magazine printing process. Some of the things happening around this period, I left the museum to have more time in my studio. David Ryan was now the director. W.C. Austin, a Fort Worth artist, opened an old neighborhood theater called The Heights, the only place to see classic old movies, a gathering place for movie buffs and artists, and it is where we first met up with Mark and Randy Thistlewaite.
I arrived in Fort Worth to teach at TCU in 1977 and almost immediately became aware of Linda's and Ed's works because I was invited to present a lecture at the Fort Worth Art Museum, as the modern was known then, on the subject of contemporary art, and I wanted to include works by Texas artists in that presentation. Soon I began seeing their works, along with those of other Fort Worth artists, in the lobby of the Heights Movie Theater. At the Heights, I discovered the Blackburns, like me, favored B-Western and film noir movies of the 1930s and 40s. These kinds of films were standard fare on local TV stations in Southern California, where I grew up. Ed's and Linda's paintings also fascinated me in how they embraced and expanded the ideas and aesthetics of pop art. Their work really was on the cutting edge of what was to become known as postmodernism. In fact, the Moderns collection includes a work by Ed titled Pop Post from 1972, the very year, according to the influential critic Charles Jenks, that postmodernism began. Pop Post was to be featured in a unique collaborative exhibition, really the first of its kind, of Ed's art organized by the Modern Museum and TCU in 1982. Funded by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Pangburn Foundation of Fort Worth, the exhibition occurred simultaneously at the museum and the newly opened Mowdy Gallery at TCU. At the university, gallery director Karen Stone and I curated a retrospective survey of Ed's work. While at the museum, curator Susan Freudenheim installed a new series by Ed. Working with Ed and Linda on this exhibition, I came to know how thoughtful and articulate he is about his work, although you wouldn't know it from my own notes. I well remember hanging Ed's 9.5-foot-wide painting, Still Life with Elvis Movie and Blue Boy, and him walking back the length of the gallery to ponder it silently for several minutes, and then quietly saying, "It needs to go up a little, quarter inch on the right."
The work at the Modern, the B movie paintings, represent my version of that particular American genre known as Western art. But underneath that, they're essentially about using a subject that is both realistic and not real, and folding that some way into the pictorial space of painting. That place where everything hangs in the balance, everything opens or closes, lives or dies.
Printmaking in the 1980s flourished in Texas. In 1983, Mike and Joe Hart opened a print shop in Dallas called Paragon Press. Artists were invited to come and work with master printers. Ed and I were included. In 1990, the Modern did a major exhibition of Texas prints and purchased a number of the works, including two of my monoprints. Jim Fisher was the print curator and E.A. Carmine the director. In the evolution of museum stewardship, Marla Price became the director in 1992. In 1996, Terry Thornton and her ongoing duties as curator of education, as well as being the head of the Tuesday Evening Artist Program, asked Ed to give a slide presentation of his work. Ed started hatching up something fresh on his mind and engaged the services of myself, Brian Fridge, Jim Malone, Ann Ekstrom, as well as Debbie Brooks, who was first cello with the Fort Worth Symphony. It amounted to a collaboration/performance with excerpts from Raymond Chandler, Rodgers and Hart, lyrics and music, a film review, and fresh off the press poetry. This all was accompanied overhead with large images of still lifes, landscapes, and portraits, anchored by a bass-like video of an Interstate Highway 30 drive from Fort Worth to Dallas.
Turn left into the private road. The lights drifted off among the trees, and the sound faded into the long, drawn wee of tree frogs. Then that stopped, and for a moment there was no sound at all, and no light except the tired old moon. I broke the magazine from the gun. It had 7 shells in it. There was another in the breech, 2 less than a full load. I sniffed the muzzle. It had been fired since it was cleaned. Fired twice, perhaps. Pushed the magazine back into place again and held the gun flat on my hand. It had a white bone grip, 32 caliber. Orrin Quest had been shot twice. 2 exploded shells were picked up on the floor of the room were 32 caliber. And yesterday afternoon, in room 332 in the Hotel Van Nuys, a blonde girl with a towel in front of her face had pointed a 32 automatic with a white bone grip at me. You can get too fancy about these things. You can also not get fancy enough. Thank you.
being.
In 1998, I had the good fortune to curate a Blackburns exhibition titled The Adventures of Eddie Leon, Paintings by Ray Madison, which was installed in the space that the Modern had opened at Sundance Square in the old Sanger building. Ray Madison was the nom de brush that Linda and Ed adopted for a series of paintings about the capers of Eddie Leon, the sign painter private eye. Working at night with Brian Fridge, blasting Nouvelle surf music, they produced a huge eye-popping mural. Concurrently with the adventures of Eddie Leon, Ed, Linda, and I also collaborated on two other exhibitions of their works, Ed's Biblical Paintings and Linda's Bee Landscapes, which were installed at the Contemporary Art Center of Fort Worth, also in Sundance Square.
The initial spark on all this was an actual comic strip that Linda and I made. This evolved into some prints, then into paintings. Sometimes the artist is the last to know. In hindsight, we could see that all along the idea was really to make some paintings, contemporary paintings, with more narration than expected. The invitation to work at Sundance Square was an opportunity, an open door, to deal with some grand traditions like scale, juxtaposition, comic book covers, Times Square marquees.
For the Modern's 2002 publication on its permanent collection, I contributed several essays, including one on Ed's painting Hoppy Serves a Writ, a work, by the way, painted for inclusion in the Modern TCU Collaborative Exhibition of 1982.
As always the case in Mark's work, he executes these essays with a pen worthy of a Perry Mason scriptwriter. In compiling complex and pertinent data that you hardly notice being done, while art savvy takes a scholarly curve to the light surrounding art.
Thank you.
to and fro, hard working at the mill, never fail in the mill, yet come a rotten bill. Too much monk business. Too much monk business.
You too. Quit it. Leave. Go. Get out of here. Go over by that tree.
Mr. Leon, please, let's talk. My name is Robin LeMay. I'm the host of a talk show on Channel 61. It's called You Don't Mean It. Kyle is my side man. We're both actors. I'm sorry, Mr. Leon. It was a job. I'm truly sorry. It's just, we'd hate to lose the show.
A job for who?
For whom? Well, I don't really know. I work for people who work for other people. They weren't going to pick up the option on our show unless I'm truly sorry.
Well, Robin, I'm all for talk shows. Big talk show fan. As far as I'm concerned, you and Kyle can go on with You Can't See It.
You Don't Mean It.
Yeah. And better things, bigger. My best wishes. My blessings. But I gotta have something on this to keep going with.
I don't know.
That's the deal, Robin. Otherwise, I'm going to be in your hair, and that's a promise.
Jerry Boyce.
Can you hear me? Yeah, okay, okay. Well, this is my work on the end. it's a small painting. It's called Jake West. It's about 34 by 44. It's acrylic on canvas. And I guess as time has gone by, I've gone for, attracted to real simple things, simple, kind of quiet and simple, and I'm a big fan of Marston Hartley and Milton Avery, and I don't care if it looks dumb or not. I kind of like dumb. I don't like smart too much. I like dumb better than smart. So it's just, you know, kind of like a basic narrative, but really, I mean, I guess they've kind of evolved from Western movies, but they've kind of, I kind of just get to where I just make them up and don't need, I mean, occasionally I'll get a gesture from somebody, but for the most part, they're just made up and they're actually better that way. And they I like to let the paint show through, so it just kind of adds a little, I guess it gives it a little different perspective. It shows it's a painting, perhaps, and a little depth of something going on. So I really want just an idea. I guess you could call it a soul sense coming forward. So really, that's about it. What I need to say about it.
You want to talk about yours real quick?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, ever since I first met Linda, I have to comment on her painting quickly. I always thought that she painted like an adolescent who happened to understand Gauguin. So that was my take on her, and still is. This painting behind it is mine. It's pretty recent, out of a series. It's about five by six feet, something like that. I'd been doing these things that Mark was commenting on, working on in Photoshop and putting things on email and sending them out a couple a week to about 100 or so people, whoever wants to sign up. And they're kind of a captive audience for this. It's sort of like an ongoing exhibition. And the subject is mainly, it has a lot to do with the news, but it's also just making art. And the point maybe I'd say about it is that I think of it as a new medium. Instead of putting images of paintings or watercolors or etchings or anything like that on in a site, I think of it as the work is done there and belongs there and just exists there. So it's like it's a medium. And it's pretty interesting in that way. And in the process, it opened up a lot of doors because I was working in Photoshop. And there's those of you who do, you know, it's got special kind of tools. You can work fast. You can make a lot of changes. And it's a great medium, really. So it kind of led to these paintings that have a source in the news, and I think of them as news movies. And I like keeping the idea of a narration in a visual work, because it seems to operate as a sort of tension, because it doesn't really belong there. Visual work being visual and being a moment in time and timeless. And narration brings in the element of time, so it creates some tension. And in short, that's what it's really all about, is to create a feeling about the work where it doesn't fit expectations. I think all art depends on that tension. It won't fit in a slot, and so you're going to see it in a fresh way. So I use the idea of the news media and kind of expand it out into thinking of it sort of as a movie, with that kind of free narrative about it, and kind of find the form through those components. Okay.
Before we open it up for questions, Linda had mentioned something to me after we had finished the video about the Robert Rauschenberg opening and the comment that you heard.
Oh, from his mother?
Yeah. Would you repeat that?
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me? He was just, during the Robert Rauschenberg opening, his mother came. You know, Rauschenberg's from Port Arthur, and he was from Port Arthur. And his mother was a beautiful white-haired lady, and she came to the opening. It was the first opening that she had ever been to of his. And he had just won the Biennale Painting Prize, the World Biennale Painting Prize. And she didn't have anybody to talk to, so I was just talking to her. And she said, "Is he really that good?" And I, you know, knew exactly where she was coming from. And then she said, "All he really wants from me is a carrot cake at Christmas. That's all I do." And that was it.
On that, we'll open it to questions. Yes.
Could you both talk a little bit about editing in your work? I'm thinking of the film and the films that you've done, and then, but also with your paintings, because as narratives, of course, this is a moment within a larger story. So can you talk a little bit about the role that editing plays in the work?
just go back and forth, if that's what you mean.
Oh, that's Linda.
We just go back and forth together. If we're working on a video, I have my strong suits and he has his, and we kind of banging around. And we do the same with paintings. If we're building a painting, we do the same thing. A lot of times he's really, I guess, a more graphic, perhaps, a more, and mine is really more color. And so we have our strong points. And sometimes we, when we can agree, well, then, I mean, I don't know what else you could say about it. Do you have anything specific more than that?
I'm thinking about, you know, how, you, for example, you said you make up this narrative. When you're doing that, are you thinking about what happens before and after the moment that you decide to paint? I mean, you playing out the full story and choosing a scene from that story to paint?
No.
How does that work?
No, as far as my work goes, no. I just, I don't know. I start anywhere you can start. I may have a figure that I put in and part of a landscape, and then I just kind of let it fall where it's going to go. And I'll see a mark up there that looks like it. Hey, that looks like a rock, you know. And then usually my ideas are the worst, you know. They're the best when I find them, you know. Just and I might, but I might see something somewhere that I can add. It's just a linear thing, like in that the horse guy. So I think that. You know, and they're constantly painted over and over and over again. There's lots and lots of layers on there, so a lot of quick decisions. And I just kind of have to find them. I found that if I paint something literally like a real cloud or a real mountain, they're always second rate. You know, they have to come from somewhere else, not just I'll look at that and I'll paint it, because that makes it. I guess more literal, more narrative in what I'm considering narrative. So I don't like that. I like to let it find me rather than me find it somehow.
Well, in that painting, for example, Linda, I'm thinking about the little... What I see as being sort of ghost figures.
Yeah, they were there at one point, and then they're underneath now. No.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I got the very first part of your question.
Well, I'm asking about editing. You know, the notion of editing. Like, you made a lot of decisions of what to leave out as much as what to put into that painting. And then the same thing with your films.
Yeah, editing. I missed that. I'm following that. Yeah, it's really going to be a pretty interestingly similar answer. That this thing about, we call it spontaneity, also you could call it randomness, is a most interesting factor to me in art and painting. And, I'd paraphrase this by saying that there's so many ways to make good art. And so what we're talking about is what we've gravitated toward, you know, our art. But there's something about random, particularly when it's combined, it's like somebody's doing something specific and it's got a narrative connected to it and it's still got a degree of random to it. That is a really interesting place to me. And part of what random is it... I think it's the way to make something visual, make it as clear as possible. A random mark is the most two-dimensional mark that you can come up with, because it's right there on the surface, and it just is what it is. And 2D translates directly into clarity to me. So there's a kind of equation there. So I'm always just kind of... going with those components and trying to get the get things to happen in that combination. And that's where I think I would say the answer about editing lies, right in there.
And also, I think randomness takes it off yourself so much. So you're not personally making this. It's coming from somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay, not that bad. Yep. Opens the door.
Yeah. Yes.
So you each talk about how you sort of let the paint do its own thing, as you will, or randomness. What would be about, like, I guess the relationship between what is planned and what isn't planned with Yale's individual work? What would you say about that line and fall? Does it kind of vary between each painting, between what's planned and what's not?
Yeah, it does. And I think artists operate in that area. And sometimes it's more planned, and you follow your plan. But Linda was talking about things are not usually as interesting or have life in them as much when you're planning them. For me, anyway, and I think for her probably too. So, that's the nice thing about it, and the challenge is that you've got kind of a way you're approaching it, but you don't really have a way that you know it's going to work, a system. You don't really have that. And I think that's one of the great things about making art is you're in that position. And it makes it sort of uneasy in a way, but the payoff is real big because it's going to surprise you. And if it surprises you, it's going to be that way for somebody looking at it.
But still, it has to have a form to give it a kind of classical coherence, you know, when you get through with everything.
Yeah.
I mean, so you're still editing at the end. It may have all this random stuff in it, but it still has to feel absolutely perfect on that canvas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot back there in the back of your mind, and I know people who do art, you understand that. You know, somebody will sometimes ask somebody while they're doing art, what are you thinking about? They're in the middle of this painting. What are you thinking about? And they'll often just say, oh, nothing, really. I'm just painting. But there's so much going on. There's so much that you're thinking about that you're aware of. And then you do reach something where it all comes together some way. And the closest I've been able to come to, I'll say this real quick, so closest I've ever been able to come to an idea of how do you decide if a painting is finished is I grew up in the Panhandle, and the sky's real big up there, and it's real expansive feeling. And so I realized some years back that when I was looking at a painting, if it finally looked like the Panhandle, no matter what the subject was in it, that I would say, oh, yeah, it's working now. It's good.
Any other questions? Yes, Jenna.
So, I'm a little ashamed to say I didn't know about the email gallery, but I'm really curious about this idea, the concept of being able to reach out to somebody via the internet, share a painting with them, and accept that sooner or later they're going to delete it. And what that means to you, and it feels there's something in my brain that thinks that question relates to both of your work in some kind of sense of time and experience. But I'm not smart enough to figure that out.
Well, okay. I hear you. I think I'm following your point there. And I don't know, maybe. But it seems like the idea that you're making this art, you're making these images, and they're operating as art, and there's a lot of ways that that can end up, and it can be a painting that's this physical thing, and you hope it ends up somewhere in a nice place that people can look at it. But there's also a way of doing art where it's more ephemeral. It's doesn't have that long a life. But are there just some unknowns about that part? But you make it, and give it a shape and put it out, and you know it's available for a time and maybe longer. And I don't know if I'm answering you, but I think that's what's behind it with me. It's just the idea that you're making art. And this little thing that I'm doing, it's sort of like a show. You know, artists are always trying to figure out how to be artists in this world. And there's a lot of ways to do it. In galleries, that's a good way, of course. Museum shows, excellent. But you just find other ways. So this is like kind of an ongoing show. I'm not sure I really answered you.
It kind of reminds me of the project. I don't know if it's ongoing, but years ago you would do those sort of trading card or cards. And they were gifts, essentially. At least I thought of them. And I've thought about this project as a kind of gift you're doing. I mean, I'm not deleting mine. I'm making a book out of them. But that idea, can you talk a little bit about this? They used to, every once in a while, you would get something handmade, little card, and it would be... The one I always remember I mentioned to you was Spade Cooley, who was a country western singer that was big in Los Angeles. And I received one from them and it said, "Best wishes, Spade Cooley." And what is this about? And the show at Tyler had a whole bunch of those, which was neat to see. Does that relate at all to what you're doing?
Oh, I think so. I think so. The cards are just kind of, in a way, they're kind of throwaway. They're just small little drawings that Ed does, the kind of a random drawing that he thinks feels like somebody in the country and western singer from the 40s to the 90s. And then I will do the watercolor on it, and it'll just say famous country western singers. And then on the back, he might write a little comment about them saying, you know, something really general, you know, like had a couple of hits during the 70s or something, you know. And they're just, you know, they're just kind of throwaway drawings. And then we usually, after they're watercolored, we have them laminated. And we've given them away for years. And in fact, we just made some more because they're so much fun to do. And they're just kind of they're fun to do and they're fun to give away. So they're, in that sense, they're related in that they come from us and they go out and they can mean something to somebody or not. Isn't that what you think?
Yeah, maybe it's pretty kin to music too, you know. People just play music and whoever's there and whoever's hearing it,
yeah.
Well, there it is.
Yeah.
And visual art has some other edges to it, but it can kind of operate that way a bit. Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, I just want to say... Oh, Ann, go ahead.
So I was really struck by the role the museum played in the video. And I was thinking, well, of course, you know, it's a place you go to see other images, but it also seemed like a space of collaboration. You met people that you went off and did other projects with. So I'm just wondering if you could talk about the museum, not just as a collection, but as a kind of magnet for other people that you would collaborate with.
You mean for us or for Mark?
How about all of you?
Well, yeah, I think that people come to the museum and see something, and it inspires them to do something, or it inspires them to curate something, or... I mean, that's just the way it goes. That's the way it goes out, and that's the way it should go out. And I think this museum has certainly used that. Particularly, I mean, in the olden days, they did more regional stuff, I think, than they do now. But that was then, and this is now. And maybe we've just become more... national, but I think things do still go out in various ways, and I think that we appreciate the museum. I mean, we all do, having this institution and having the opportunity to be with it. Do you want to say anything?
That's more.
You want to say something about it?
No. No, it's a great resource, and part of the impetus behind this was this is the 125th year anniversary of the founding of the Fort Worth Art Association, which is the oldest museum association in Texas, and so we were sort of, because we've been involved in various ways. I mean, Linda mentioned she wore a number of hats. Well, the number of hats was really quite extraordinary that she wore. And Ed was a guard, and you were saying how you had the key and you would come in at night and, you know, look at the art and do drawings and no one was bothering you and that sort of thing. I was also thinking about it because I'm working with students on a project, the work of Maki Trotter, who taught at TCU for a long time. And he was a mainstay of the Art Center School for a lot of years. So that kind of collaboration has, you know, been part of this museum certainly for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that it?
One last question, or is anybody else's, but to kind of tag on to Anne's question, I was sort of struck by how much you devoted your presentation to the museum as well. And I know that the museum story is in part your story. That's what I got from it. But when you were back then, were you aware of what was happening, how you were, your career was developing, your life was developing? Were you conscious of that? Because you were photographing. I mean, would it have ever occurred to you back then that someday you would be sitting in this auditorium showing a film of your youthful days at the Modern, you know?
Never.
But you still had that material to work from. So some part of you collected that material.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I think you just, at the time, you can't be objective about what's going on or where you're going or what you're doing even.
You might say also in regards to that the museum played quite a role for us, and I think for a number of artists during that time that we would know. Because, I mean, it's a place where the best art around, you go there to see it. And the people that work there, you find out are really smart people. They're some of the best people around about knowing about art. And so artists get jobs there, and work, and make contacts. And it was a great resource for us. We it was just kind of a center in a way that we were connected with. Because we did, it was our jobs, that was part of it. But there was a time, just be real quick, dude, there was a time where we were actually thinking, we've got to get to another place, another area, so our art can go out to a wider audience. And it was right about then that Henry Hopkins came, and the whole kind of thing shifted. Instead of being an art center, it became an art museum. And he started bringing in national, international people. And so we were, you know, still working there and sort of watching all that happen. And then we were fortunate enough to get to be part of some things that were happening. So it just kind of evolved, you know. And to this day, it feels like it was a very fortunate situation for us. You know, we just got so much from that connection. And still do. Here we are tonight doing this. And it's a lot of fun. It's great.
Okay. You want to cut it off?
Cut it off, she says. It was always my goal. So I want to thank Ed and Linda. It was a joy for me to work with them. It always is. And I'm so glad that you offered that opportunity. It was really fun. And thank you all for coming. Good night.